Is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Escalations in Los Angeles this weekend over ICE arrests prompted President Trump to mobilize active duty National Guard troops, and now 700 California Marines are being added.
U.S. Northern Command said Sunday they were on a prepared-to-deploy status if the Defense Department needed them. Minutes before the news was confirmed, I asked the president,
are you going to deploy Marines in California?
We'll see what happens. I mean, I think we have it very well under control. I think it would have been a very bad situation. It was heading in the wrong direction. It's now heading in the right direction.
Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
Governor Gavin Newsom says the state is suing the Trump administration for sending National Guard troops, saying it made the situation worse. HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has terminated 17 members of the CDC's Independent Advisory Board. The committee makes recommendations to the CDC Director for Vaccine Schedules. And stocks ended mixed today as trade talks continue between the U.S. and China. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Legislative Republicans and Governor Tony Evers have ended negotiations on the state budget. With more, here's Civic Media's Savannah Tomei Olson.
Republicans are now officially crafting their own budget after walking out on negotiations with Governor Tony Evers. They've been in talks trying to come to an agreement on tax cuts, a priority for Republicans, and funding things like schools, child care centers, and universities, a priority for the governor. Republican State Senator Mark Bourne, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee.
Unfortunately, those conversations have stopped. The spending really that the governor needs is just more than the state can afford, and it was getting to the point where it was about 3-1 compared to the tax cuts that we were looking at.
Wisconsin currently has a record $4.5 billion or so surplus, according to the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum. Republicans have the majority, so now this budget is essentially in their hands. Democratic State Senator Kelda Royce.
We're going to see a budget that does very little to lower costs for working families. I think we're going to see a budget that fails our kids. We're going to see a budget that refuses to invest in our public universities at a really critical time. We're going to see a budget that turns a blind eye to relief for ordinary Wisconsinites. We're going to see a budget that exacerbates the child care crisis in the state.
Thursday, Republicans added more bonding authority to clean drinking water initiatives and $500,000 to a program to train more physicians. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Legislators are trying to finalize the budget by the end of the month. This week in La Crosse City Government, there are 7 committee meetings ahead of Thursday's Common Council meeting. Today, the Board of Public Works will consider approval of a resolution to allow the La Crosse School District to begin work at the Hogan Administrative Site for a new elementary school. A council planning session is set for tomorrow ahead of a long agenda Thursday for the Common Council, which includes voting on proposals to raise stormwater utility fees twice in the next 7 months. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Brewers baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, where the Brewers open a series against the Atlanta Braves in Milwaukee. The crew losing a close one yesterday, 1-0 to the San Diego Padres. Freddie Peralta allowed just one hit, no runs, through 6 innings, 90 pitches, and thought about going back out in the 7th.
For 1 second, I was thinking about it to come back, but same time, we took the decision that it was good enough for the day and just to bring somebody else.
So Rob Zastrzynski took over in the 7th, and Manny Machado knocked one out of the park on him. That was the ball game. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
I mean, it was a decision that, we had to talk to Freddie first, see how he felt. He was out of gas. Could we have pushed him into it? I'm sure he would have done it for us. But you don't do that this time of the year.
NFL. The Packers have decided to release defensive back Jair Alexander. The team asking Alexander to take a pay cut, in part because he's missed half the games the last 2 seasons. The defensive back was scheduled to make $17 million this season. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. An isolated shower or two this evening, then a clearing sky tonight, and a low in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, hazy sunshine from a little smoke, warmer, highs into the low 80s. Chances for showers and thunderstorms return Wednesday into Thursday. Currently at 64 degrees.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
We need a fun listener name, something the followers of the show can call themselves. I thought, how about Couch Potatoes?
Potatoes?
I said it as a joke, and Todd cracked up. He goes, I love that. Whatever it is, folks, embrace your inner couch potato. We are not meant to work in the farms and hunt food. We were 1,000 years ago. But now, I think God wants us to sit back and be entertained.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, he hosts the Todd Alba Show, appropriately named from 2 to 4 across the network. Todd Alba joins us after 9:30. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, my big thanks to my co-host this entire afternoon, Matt Rothschild. He's got that fine podcast, Wisconsin Forward. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts. But, of course, at civicmedia.us. We have been talking about, with you, with each other, trying to process what in the hell has been going on. The deployment, the idea that active duty military, not just National Guards men and women, but active duty military are being moved, stationed into Los Angeles, Marines, potentially over a battalion's worth. That's 700 plus Marines to respond to protesters. Wow. And all of this in part being, of course, incited by the Trump administration, this escalation, intentional, I think one could argue, as massive protests mobilize across the country in response to mass deportation and immigration raids. Not as Donald Trump promised, we're going to go get the bad guys and the murderers and the people that are destroying property and are really striking hearts, fear into the hearts of regular Americans. No, they're not picking up the murderers and the bad guys. They're picking up grandmas and people that have been working here for 25 years and their kids. And that's what's going on. Thousands of protests. And specifically on Friday, the leader of SEIU in California, a gentleman by the name of David Huerta, was apparently like beaten down by federal law enforcement. And he has been in custody ever since. So, again, everything seeming to be escalating thanks to the Trump administration. But all of this exists in the larger context of U.S. immigration law. And I think most of us generally understand things aren't working particularly well lately, but we may not know why exactly that is. So Matt and I are extremely grateful to be joined by just the person to help us understand that, Erin Murphy Barbato. She is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Erin, thanks so much for making time and helping us all understand what's going on.
Thanks so much for having me, and I hope I can help us understand what's going on.
Well, we'll give it a good college try, I guess, pun or law school try, right, together. Let me just start very seriously, just like Matt and I, just like all of our listeners watching the news over the weekend, extraordinarily shocking developments. Your reactions on the deployment of the National Guard troops, on this seeming escalation of conflict between the administration and those that disagree with its policies.
Right. I mean, it is shocking, but I can't say I'm not surprised. It seems to be part of a scheme of this administration to certainly invoke drama and bring a highlight to people that are in opposition to ICE and some of the more extremely aggressive tactics that they're doing within our communities. And I think, you know, general population is not prepared to see people being ripped from their homes or from their children. And that's what's starting to happen. And also the power of the state versus the federal government, we're seeing that happen as well. And I can't say we were surprised that that would happen between, you know, President Trump and the governor of California.
Yeah, it seems that he is quite eager when it comes to, quote, blue states or blue cities. Let me start with this term, Aaron, because it gets bandied about a bunch, and no one knows what it means, if anything, in particular. And that is the term sanctuary cities. Is there such a thing as defined in federal law or state law somewhere? Because I've looked, and I can't find a legal definition anywhere for that.
No, Maggie, you're correct. There is no, legal definition of what a sanctuary city is. And certain cities may have, you know, sanctuary policies. Madison often is described as, where I live, a place where there are sanctuary policies, but not necessarily a sanctuary city. But then you look at, you know, LA, California, a lot of the bigger liberal cities will find themselves categorized as sanctuary cities and then targeted by certain people or found to be more safe by certain people. But it's often describing the amount of compliance that local law enforcement will have with immigration customs enforcement, you know, the immigration police. And certain places in Wisconsin have very strong bonds and strong 287G agreements where they work directly together. Madison doesn't have that, but there's a number of places that do have that in Wisconsin. So 287G is defined in the Immigration and Nationality Act, but what a sanctuary city is, it depends on what the person, how they interpret it.
Well, and at a very high level, and then Matt, I'll ask you to jump in if you've got questions. At a very high level, one of the things that I try to point out to folks with some degree of regularity is that it used to be a sort of battle cry of conservatives, the states' rights, and this reliance on the 10th Amendment. And one of the things that people have to keep in mind here, aside from the fact that states' rights was simply a dog whistle to all sorts of Jim Crow-style racist, oppressive regimes, was that at the root of it, the idea of the 10th Amendment was that federal government could not effectively take over the apparatuses of state and local government for the purposes of executing federal law. Well, immigration law is federal law. And so if an immigration official says to a local law enforcement official, I don't know, say like a sheriff, and says, you must keep Juan Ramos or Jane Smith or whomever the heck it is in custody until I can get there and figure out if this is someone who's there illegally, that is not permitted under our constitutional order. They cannot compel local law enforcement to hold on to people longer than the state law or state constitutional basis allows for their detainer. Am I getting that mostly right, Aaron?
No, I think you're getting it all right, based on what my, you know, my experiences, my understanding is. And I think when you look at that, you know, 48-hour ICE detainer and whether local officials, sheriff's offices are willing to hold someone past that, we've seen a number of conservative sheriffs say, I cannot do that. It is against the law and I'm not going to break the law. So there's a lot of misinformation, I think, that the public is understanding or not understanding in these situations.
Professor Barbato, you're director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School, and so you give advice to law students and to clients, I imagine, about how to handle immigration proceedings. It's getting really dicey right now, so I'm just wondering, what advice are you giving to clients or students who are dealing with clients when these clients have an appointment with ICE on their citizenship status, because some of those folks are getting grabbed by ICE when they walk into the courtroom door. So doesn't that make your job difficult? And how do you counsel people?
You know, it has made my job has always been difficult. Immigration lawyering has never been easy. Teaching law students how to practice immigration or about immigration has never been easy. But practicing it right now, I do worry more than ever about not just our clients or the people we're serving, but about the safety of my students and their mental health as well. We're seeing families torn apart even beyond what we saw under the zero tolerance policy. You know, just today we're talking to a family, a father is going to be deported. Five U.S. citizen children are going to be left here without their father, but mostly without financial support, you know, and how do I explain that there's nothing else we can do, right? That's really hard. But in terms of preparing for a lot of people we represent are actually in detention. So in the Dodge County Detention Center, they have to show up for court. That's where they are. They're not going to be placed in a more dangerous position because of that. But now that people are being arrested in immigration court and also criminal courts, we really have to be prepared for the idea that they may not be coming out of them. So we're preparing them for the deportation. How is your family going to survive without your mom? Where are these children going to go? Are you going to take the children with you? You know, a re-entry process. It's changed substantially in such a short amount of time that we're not necessarily prepared to do it, but we're doing our best to provide some sort of access to justice and some sort of due process.
Those must be heartbreaking conversations to have with clients, though.
It's beyond. And I've been doing this for 20 years. This is not easy. It's especially not easy telling someone who's gotten to know a client so well that they're going to be deported without being able to access the benefits or the relief that they may be eligible for. But that doesn't mean we'll give up on them. It just means we may be representing them while they're in another country.
Can you this is what I wanted to get to. I did a substantial amount of pro bono asylum work when I was a young baby lawyer. Boy, is that complicated. And I was hoping that you could explain to people as a threshold matter, and we may need to bridge into the next segment, and we will. What's someone who may be eligible for asylum versus someone granted asylum? Are there different types of asylum? What does it mean to be a refugee? Is that a right. different thing? And what happens if someone comes here illegally? Is there any way to get themselves back into legal resident status, or how is that supposed to work?
So I will try to explain this, but this takes me like a semester to explain to you.
Oh, so just boil it down in about, give or take 2 minutes, Erin.
We'll see how good I am at teaching this. But the first thing I would explain is the difference between a refugee and asylee. So someone who enters the United States as a refugee, which is on pause right now, they have been defined as a refugee and found to be a refugee by the United Nations. And once the United Nations finds that, then they look for a country to house them. So a refugee is someone who has a fear of persecution or has been persecuted in their home country based on their race, nationality, membership in a particular social group, religion, or I'm forgetting.
Gender, probably. Yeah.
That falls into a particular social group. And that's what a lot of, someone who's transgender who can't return to their home country, or someone, if they're a member of a family that is persecuted by the government, something like that. But someone who's seeking asylum needs to prove that in the United States. And so when we look at, I do a lot of work across the Americas and the route that people take to get to the southern border. People are coming to the southern border because they can't get refugee status in the Americas outside of the U.S. I don't know if that makes sense. So the southern border has become this hotspot for people seeking refuge. And they have to prove that in our system, whether it's through to an immigration judge or an asylum officer with U.S. Department of Homeland Security. But one of the major reasons why our southern border has become a hotspot is because the only place people can apply for it.
Because the United States is one of the only nations where you can apply for asylum.
Right.
Is it
you can apply in other countries,
yes.
But we don't have United Nations processing people in the Americas. So they can't stay in their home country or a neighboring country and then come to the U.S. They have to get to the border of the U.S. or inside at an airport, a port of entry.
Understood. Folks, we've got Erin Murphy Barbato. She is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. We're talking about the different types of status in this country and how challenging it is to get your case heard, to provide the requisite proof if you are trying to make an asylum claim, and what to do if you're here already illegally. There's so much to get through. She's going to stick around. So is Matt Rothschild, my excellent co-host. This two-hour show, an edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. So keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. More in just a moment.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Matt Nair on air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire. Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org, a message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a fine guest with us this half hour. Her name is Erin Barbato. She is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. We were talking about the fact that the United States and our system is somewhat unique in that people can arrive here. They need to be here to request asylum here unless they are otherwise designated as a refugee by the United Nations, which program is paused regardless under Trump's, I think, one of his first executive orders, except, of course, if you're a white Afrikaner from South Africa, which that's a topic for an entirely different day. And I know how damnedly hard it is to put forward an asylum claim. I worked on approximately four different cases. Wow. And if just I'll describe it briefly, and if you could help fill in some of the details. And then I wanted to get to what does someone do if they're here already without legal permission. Mm-hmm. But just in brief, asylum cases can be brought on a variety of bases. You're being persecuted, or your life is at threat because of your gender, your family, you're getting extorted, all kinds. There's a huge gamut. One of the challenges is that in certain countries, if you are trying to get the documentation to both prove your client's identity and prove the imminent threat to their life, especially if it's due to another government's action. Mm-hmm. Gee whiz, hello, government of Myanmar. Please send me a notarized statement that you're going to kill my client because of their that document doesn't exist. Can you just share a little bit and flesh out for people better than I could based on my now 20-year-old memories of these cases, how challenging those asylum cases are to prove up and bring, and how time-consuming?
Yeah, I mean, they are extremely challenging. I think the one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, in criminal court, when someone is charged with a crime, they're going to have a lawyer that's paid for by our government. In immigration proceedings, when someone is facing deportation, they can have a lawyer, but only if they can pay for one or find a pro bono one. In Wisconsin, we are an immigration lawyer desert, especially for pro bono services. So people being able to find an attorney to help them present their case to an immigration judge when our government is trying to deport you with a very trained immigration officer, a lawyer who works for ICE, it's incredibly difficult. You're 5 times more likely to be successful in applying for asylum if you have a lawyer in court with you, right? And so that's what we try to do. We cannot fill the void, but we represent certain individuals who are facing deportation. But we do have to do the amount of hours we put in and resources to find the evidence that we need to support the claim to meet our burden is incredibly difficult. The asylum laws do allow someone to receive asylum if it's just based on their testimony, if they're credible. And so sometimes we just have their testimony, but we hire an expert, but that costs money, right? And we have to find an expert. We may be able to call a witness, but that witness may be in Guatemala and they don't speak English. So it's incredibly difficult to practice in this area, especially when the stakes are so high. There are not enough people able to represent individuals seeking asylum. And when your client could be facing certain death or persecution if you don't succeed in immigration court.
Professor Barbato, I want to get back to an anecdote that you started to tell, and I think I interrupted you, that might bring home, you know, the human cost here and just the tragic story. You mentioned a father who has several kids, I think 5 kids. I can't remember what you said. Tell us that story, what's happening to that family, and make it real for folks who are listening who may not follow every little legal nuance, but can
grab hold of this. Yeah, every case is nuanced, right? But there are two cases specifically of fathers who had prior deportation orders in the past week that are going to be deported. The deportation orders were not because of they had criminal records or anything like that. They failed to show up at immigration court in the past, which is not something that they should have done, right? They should have gone. But now under the administration and their enforcement priorities, they've been arrested by ICE and they're in deportation proceedings, they're in detention, and they're going to be deported because we would need a year or so to build a case and potentially fight it and would take all of our resources. But one father is leaving behind 5 U.S. citizen children, and one is leaving behind 4 U.S. citizen children. And the moms rely on the income of the father that's leaving. And so it's just something new. This isn't new, but it's more pronounced, and we're going to see it throughout our communities. And the people that are going to suffer the most are U.S. citizen children.
And how old are these kids?
They range from 1-year-old to 16.
What a disaster.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Erin, if someone's here without legal permission, what are their options?
You know, if someone enters the United States without authorization, there's not going to be many options for them. If they want to apply for asylum, you have to do so within the first year of being in the U.S. There are some exceptions for something called Convention Against Torture. But a lot of people enter the United States, unless they have a close family member, like marry a U.S. citizen, they're probably not going to have a pathway to citizenship without being a victim of a very serious crime. And even if you're married to a U.S. citizen, it often requires you to leave the country and be there for potentially 10 years. And that's just not an option for most families. So, you know, people say, get in line, do whatever you do to do it right. There's not really a way to do it right for most people.
There's not really a way to do it right for most people. And that is the problem. We have a broken system that's not serving us. It's not serving people who want to be here legally. You will be back, I hope, Professor Barbato, to continue to discuss this important topic. Thank you so much to Erin Murphy Barbato, Director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Please keep up the good work. My thanks to each and every one of you. And all of the students there, tell them people do care and appreciate what they're doing. We'll be back with Matt on the other side. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local...
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Legislative Republicans and Governor Tony Evers have ended negotiations on the state budget. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
Budget negotiations between Governor Tony Evers and top Republicans have hit a wall. The GOP leaders said talks had reached an impasse despite what they called good faith negotiations. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux and Budget Committee Co-Chair Senator Howard Markline said taxpayers simply cannot afford the governor's spending priorities. In response, Evers said he kept his end of the bargain, backing tax cuts for the middle class and retirees, but Republicans wouldn't budge on his calls for child care, education, and funding the UW system. Wisconsin has the largest budget surplus on record, according to an analysis from the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum.
Legislators are trying to finalize the budget by the end of the month. At the state track and field meet at UW La Crosse this past weekend, dozens of champions were crowned as the best in the state. A total of 118 event champions and 8 team champions were recognized at the two-day meet, which wrapped up on Saturday. One of those team champions was Cochran Fountain City, which earned the school's first ever girls track title. In addition, 25 verified state records were broken. The event draws upwards of 20,000 spectators each year and has an estimated $4 million impact on the La Crosse area. Scattered showers today will give way to warmer temperatures later this week. Overnight into tomorrow, skies will clear out and highs Tuesday will be around 80 degrees. On Wednesday, we'll see highs in the mid to upper 80s ahead of our next best chance of rain overnight Wednesday into Thursday when showers and storms are possible. In addition, air quality this week will continue to be a concern due to the wildfires in Canada bringing smoke into western Wisconsin. We'll have more details in our Civic Media forecast. You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now from your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Starting July 1st, you can take even more time getting to your seat at the movies. That is, if you're going to AMC theaters. The Hollywood Reporter says commercials will start playing before movies, along with coming attractions. The theater chain set up a deal with National Cinemedia. With commercials, the Dolby Surround sound ads, theater etiquette ads, and previews, you actually have time to watch another movie on your phone before your featured attraction starts. But use headphones, please. Otherwise, it would be rude. Sydney Sweeney has been in the news quite a bit lately. She's now part of a new thriller, and not the kind that involves her selling her bathwater. She and Julianne Moore have teamed up in a new thriller called Echo Valley. Moore plays a divorced single mom raising her daughter, played by Sweeney, who is running with the wrong crowd and has a drug problem, which causes her and her mom to go broke. Might have to use some of that soap money. The film is directed by BAFTA winner Michael Pierce and drops on Apple TV June 13th. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. An isolated shower or two this evening, then a clearing sky tonight, and a low in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, hazy sunshine from a little smoke, warmer, highs into the low 80s. Chances for showers and thunderstorms return Wednesday into Thursday. Currently at 62 degrees.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
All right, time to visit with Melissa Baldoff as we talk climate issues. Acting FEMA chief told staff he didn't know about U.S. hurricane seasons.
What?
See, you're speechless too. I love it. We're all just sitting here like, what?
If it is a joke, and I don't know that it is, it's not a funny one. We've seen more deadly hurricanes, so we have every reason to expect it will be a bad hurricane season.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the show Young Sheldon, actor Lance Barber, and we'll talk about the amazing career and life of Michael J. Fox. We are going to light it like it's Monday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Child talking about during that break that they couldn't contain themselves. If you want to see the secret show behind the show, listen to all of our banter in the breaks. You're going to want to watch us on Civic Media's YouTube channel. You can also watch at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, X, Facebook. I'm forgetting. I'm also on YouTube, on Blue Sky at Maggie Dawn Show. And if you really want to see me spout off on some things, you can check out my LinkedIn, Margaret Dawn, you know, because that's my professional name. Let's pick up right where we left off. We were talking about, and again, big, big thanks to our last special guest, Aaron Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Aaron said two things that Matt, as a non-lawyer, which is incredibly helpful on this show, really struck him. One, in Wisconsin, we live in an immigration attorney desert. And the second point that really resonated with Matt is that absent some really extraordinary circumstances and exceptions, if a person is here illegally, there's basically no pathway. There's almost nothing that can be done to get themselves on the right side of their legal citizenship. You're basically screwed. And Matt, we were talking about the challenges of folks trying to be immigration lawyers. One, you have to take, and I don't know this because I practiced in a profit-making capacity, but I had the good fortune to work at a law firm that permitted us to do a lot of pro bono work. And I did a number of asylum cases. And they were very difficult, extremely time-consuming, and took years. And it's very hard for lawyers that practice in immigration to make a living. The stakes are high. It's emotionally draining for them and their clients. But that area of the law is also rife for abuse. You often have clients that don't know how to navigate the systems. They may not speak English. And if you blow your client's case terribly, they're just gone. So it's a perfect storm for abuse, and frankly, the fact that there aren't more immigration lawyers is a massive problem.
Yeah, and Maggie, we were also talking during the break about what a bind the immigration lawyer is in right now, because does that if I'm an undocumented immigrant and I've got an appointment at ICE in Milwaukee tomorrow, I'm going to ask my lawyer, should I go, even go? Should I show up? Because if I do, I might get grabbed and sent away and break up my family. And yet you said the lawyer cannot tell them not to go because the lawyer has an obligation to say, you got to follow the law. That's a tough position for the lawyer and the client to be in.
Yeah, there's a lot of those situations that are occurring. Lawyers, when they're doing their job correctly, do not advise clients to break the law. That is not a lawyer operating in good faith. It is a lawyer's job to advise clients of the relative legal risk and other risks that they may face under different scenarios. But a lawyer is never permitted to advise their client to break the law. As we state that cleanly and in those stark of terms, this is a terrible situation that our country is in. And I'm going to put a huge portion of the responsibility for this quagmire, this crisis that we face, at the hands of Congress. And when I talk about Congress being ineffectual, I'm going to look dead at gerrymandering, dead at the Supreme Court that has permitted gerrymandering in such an extreme that it has rendered Congress for many terms to be almost ineffectual. The more gerrymandered a district is, the less incentive there is for a congressperson to get anything done, because an extreme partisan gerrymandering basically locks a seat in permanently. And so if you're not running in competitive races, you're not going to be very responsive to your constituency, your constituents or your district. And over time, what you see then is an unwillingness to grapple with the most challenging public policy questions of our time, because you get punished if you get it wrong, or you get punished if you seek compromise when your party's leadership is urging you to never seek compromise, to break it all, right? And again, so I look towards the MAGA regime and the precursors thereof for the dysfunction in the immigration system. We need, you know, immigration judges at an exponentially increased clip. We need
and the,
to fund,
the Biden administration almost made that happen until Trump sabotaged it.
Yes. So I look at the MAGA regime, I look at Donald Trump, and I look at Congress and those that have defended extreme partisan gerrymanders as the architects of this crisis. That's it. That's where the responsibility lies. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. If you are in the Elkhorn area, if you are at the No More Raids, No More Kidnappings protest that kicked off at 5 p.m. on the corner of Wisconsin and Walworth Streets in Elkhorn, you want to give us an on-the-ground view of that, give us a call or a text, 855-752-8557-5-CIVIC. Other updates in breaking news this hour, California union leader, which helped his, I shouldn't say helped, his arrest by federal law enforcement on Friday at an ICE protest, in part, I think, led to the escalation. He has been released from federal custody on a $50,000 bond. Again, he was arrested during an ICE raid in Los Angeles. He is a citizen. He is a father. And again, he is a citizen. Other breaking, head-scratching news, Israel diverts an aid boat carrying Greta Thunberg, who in a video says she's been, quote, kidnapped. We're trying to find out exactly what's going on there. Again, this is Greta Thunberg, environmental activist, apparently has been diverted in a boat by Israel. We will share more when it's available.
I saw a little video of that.
What is going on, this was a
humanitarian aid to Gaza that Greta Thunberg was on, and Israel raided the and blocked the boat from going in, and I guess now has arrested folks on the boat.
Unbelievable. Let's go to the phone lines, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Chad from Greenfield, you've been very patient. Thank you. Say hello to Matt. What you got for us?
Hey, sorry if I'm a little tired. I haven't been able to sleep for the past 10 days ever since Cory Booker gave that Nazi salute. I couldn't believe he did such a terrible thing like that. It makes me shake and tremble. But
what Nazi salute are you talking about by Cory Booker? I hadn't really put Cory Booker in the Nazi saluter camp. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it looked exactly what Elon Musk did in your side, so that's a Nazi salute. So I'm just going off your stuff. But the reason...
Wait. I'm sorry. Let's just stick here for a minute, Chad, if we will. You started out accusing the minority leader in the House of Representatives of a Nazi salute. Why do you say that? What are you referring to? What event? Well, because that's not what happened, as I understand things.
Oh, I saw it. If you didn't see the video, it's very clear. If you do it, there's plenty of side-by-sides on Twitter, and it's exactly the same motion Elon Musk did. And from what I learned from your side, that's a Nazi salute, so I'm just going on consistency. I don't think it is, but I'm just going off what you guys say. But I'm going to fire...
Wait.
Whatever.
I mean, Chad.
No, whatever. It doesn't work for your narrative.
Wait a minute. You brought it up. I'm asking you a follow-up question about this.
Sure.
You're trying to say my side. Let's be clear, Chad. You're not on the side of Nazis. You don't think Nazi salutes are good, do you?
Oh, no, and I don't think they're good at all, and that's why I'm so disappointed he did it. But I'm just going based on...
Would you then, if you're disappointed in Cory Booker, you're alleging, again, that he did some kind of Nazi salute, then you would equally slam Elon Musk for same, correct?
Well, I didn't think it was a Nazi salute until you guys said it was. So I'm just going off what you guys say.
Chad.
Now it doesn't work, though.
Do you and I agree that if someone does a salute or some hand gesture that can reasonably be interpreted as a Nazi salute, and it is deeply offensive to people of all backgrounds, but especially Jewish folks, that's not good, right?
Yeah, you're proving my point, because Cory Booker did the same thing Elon Musk did. So,
I'm asking you, Chad, I haven't looked at what Cory Booker did. I will certainly give it a read. But what I'm asking you is, I think it is a reasonable visual interpretation of what Elon Musk did, that that was a Nazi salute. Do you think that is a reasonable interpretation, given what he did not once but twice? The manner in which he did it, his facial expression.
I would like to talk about David Herta, but I will answer your question. I will answer it. I did not think Elon Musk did do a Nazi salute until everyone said he did, and then Cory Booker did the same thing. I challenge you.
Chad, I get your point. I'm just asking you to be similarly accountable. If you're saying Cory Booker should be condemned for doing a Nazi salute, and I don't think any of Cory Booker's past, he's never tweeted something anti-Semitical to the best.
Neither has Elon. Yes,
he has, Chad. That's just simple.
He's tweeted.
He supports the far right neo-Nazi party in Germany. What are you talking
about? Chad, he appeared via video link at the party rally, the national party rally, for a political party in Germany that is associated with the Nazi alt-right in Germany. So, yes, Elon Musk had a very specific, well-documented history of embracing neo-Nazi, alt-right, and anti-Jewish imagery. So that was part of the context when we looked at what Elon Musk did at that rally. Cory Booker, on the other hand, doesn't have that history. But if you want to go on imagery alone, all I'm asking you to do, Chad, to have any validity to what you're saying, is if you think what Cory Booker did was bad, please, right now, I'm giving you an opportunity, Chad from Greenfield, condemn what Elon Musk did.
Oh, I am condemning it because I...
Woo, we got to a point of agreement with Chad. That's amazing. Whew, it only took 5 minutes. Chad from Merrimack, you're up next. What do you got for us? Say hello to Matt.
Hello, Matt. Yeah, so what do you call it when a masked person comes into your home or your place of business or your church or your school and grabs you without any kind of legal background or reasonable cause, pulls you out, takes you away in an unmarked vehicle, and puts you into a foreign country? Because if that happened, for example, with, say, an Israeli citizen in Israel, they'd call it terrorism.
Yeah.
Or when it happened in Pinochet's Chile, they called it disappearing, kidnapping and disappearing people. And that's, where we're at here. We have people in our country who are being disappeared, essentially.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate that. Ollie from the Northwoods, you're up. Say hi to Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Ollie.
I just have something to say that it seems like people are giving him, Trump, an excuse, saying that he's trying to sow chaos and stuff, but.
I'm just going to jump in, Ollie. We got limited time left. I'm not providing Donald Trump an excuse. Sowing chaos, inciting increasing levels of violence so that Donald Trump can exert control over the military and set up literally what history tells us is the necessary predicate to a dictatorship, that is control of a large portion of the military. That's what's going on. It ain't an excuse. It ain't a reason. It's just damnedly scary and is one of the indicators that we are through the looking glass when it comes to protecting our democracy.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer. Matt and Air on Air.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor.
Remember the film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? A driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, you're going the wrong way. And Candy and Steve Martin go, ha, 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 how do they know where we're headed? Congress and the administration are saying, this is what we're going to do for our budget. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State Senator Kelda Royce.
The vast majority of people on Medicaid are already working, and it is Medicaid that makes it possible for them to work. People who are disabled or have chronic illnesses, and without that health care, they would be out of the workforce. They would have no ability to participate in the economy, and now they can. Medicaid is one of the greatest workforce programs this country has ever built, and they are trying to dismantle it, and with it, they're going to take people's lives and economic security.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presumed innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on lacrosseeagle.com/contest-terms. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, tomorrow I'm going to be a guest bartender at a charity event. So I'm really excited and thankful that my current guest co-host, Matt Rothschild, is going to be here with all of you alongside Angela Lang and Dan Schaefer. You will be in fine hands, six of them indeed, for tomorrow's conversation. I'll be back on Wednesday. But Matt, guess who's back on the line? Wants to argue some more. Hey, Chad, I see you called back. Yeah. I just watched the Cory Booker video. They're not at all similar. Like, not at all, and you know that.
I don't know how they aren't, but that's a different issue. I wanted to ask you about
the Dan Hare thing. Chad. One is a clear expression of heartfelt togetherness. The other one has an angry billionaire-like boy with an angry face ripping off what is clearly a salute style. The other one's like a half wave. You don't see the difference between the two.
No, it sounds convenient.
Would you put your hand on a Bible? Do you believe in God, Chad? Would you put your hand on the Bible and swear to that? You would.
Oh, in a heartbeat. I'll do it.
All right. So tell me right now. I swear to God. I swear to God that I believe those two things are exactly the same. Tell me, Chad. I swear to God. I believe these two things are exactly the same. Do it. Do it on live radio, Chad. Come on.
Are you gonna let me speak or no?
I'm gonna let you swear to God that those two things are the same.
I swear to God that those two things look pretty darn similar to me.
And God help save Chad's soul, his immortal soul. My goodness.
And also, let's remember what Elon Musk said after the controversy raged. He said, I bet you did not see that coming. Nazi, N-A-Z-I.
Yeah.
So, here's a little adolescent fool who toys with
the libs.
Holocaust
fun.
Imagery, Elon Musk, and Chad can't even admit that.
It's different.
You know, Elon Musk is in allegiance with neo-Nazis in Germany.
Just watch the tape from the AFD meeting. That's all I got to say. And from Chippewa Falls, say hello to Matt. What do you have for us this afternoon?
I guess we can all agree on one thing with Chad, is that Donald Trump has done a great job of dividing us. And I'm very fearful, and the rest of the country should be. I was in the service and in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was friends with a lot of different people. And one black man said to me, young man, he said, our next war will be a race war. And I just thought, well, no, that's never going to happen. Well, here we are. And what we're doing to other people, this is scary business, guys. So all those people that want to argue about Musk and Trump and Biden and all that. Let's get serious here, guys. This is about our freedom. Anything you do against Trump, you will be arrested.
And it may be Trump today, but maybe it's the guy you disagree with or the gal you disagree with tomorrow, Chad, right? Like, the picture is bigger, and it's actually as much Chad's rights as it is anybody else's rights that those protesters are taken to the streets in defense of. This sort of oligarchical billionaire boys in charge, suppressing the vote, suppressing disagreement, that isn't good for anybody. There seems to be this delusion that has gripped the MAGA regime and its supporters that it's just fine to trample all over our most closely and shared held values because it's my guy, because we're winning. But that's just the con, right? That's the bit. That's the thing that they want people, God bless him, Chad, and good luck with your immortal soul. That's what they want us to do, right? Think of this in terms of black and white or urban and rural. The reality is we all, us regular people, us 90%ers, we have so much more in common with one another than anything that divides us, no matter what Donald Trump and the MAGA regime is trying to tell you this. Here are the things that we have in common right now. We're facing an average tariff rate of nearly 22%. That's the highest since 1909. We are facing each of our households at least $5,000 to our annual grocery bills, courtesy of Donald Trump. We are facing the lowest levels of consumer confidence in our economy for the last 4 years, thanks to Donald Trump. 25, now 50% steel tariffs are going to make houses more expensive. Schooling ain't getting any cheaper. Childcare ain't getting any cheaper, right? None of the things that we all need to work better is any of this happening. And if you happen to be a law enforcement and national security hawk, guess what all these thousands of troops aren't doing? Guess what the thousands of other federal law enforcement that have been pulled off of their important work dealing with drug trafficking or other national security issues are doing now that they're rounding up neighbors and friends who have worked here for decades and paid taxes, right? They're not doing the core work that our nation needs to protect it from our actual enemies, both foreign and domestic. It is a distraction to think it is us and them. The only us and them here are those of us in the 90% versus the billionaire boy oligarchs. That's what's going on. Money ain't speech. Corporations Americans aren't people. And if you don't believe me, $51 trillion, that's the amount of money that has gone from the bottom 90% to the top 1% since 1981. That system ain't working. Everything else is a distraction. Matt, I'm going to give you the last thoughts on the day. We got about a minute.
Well, I just want everyone to oppose these steps toward martial law that we're seeing. I want everybody to support due process and habeas corpus and our Bill of Rights. And I want everybody to protest absolutely nonviolently. We've got to defend our democracy right now. This is the crucial time. And thanks for listening and thanks for calling, everyone.
Great show. Thanks, Matt.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Demonstrators are back in the streets in Los Angeles. So far, fewer crowds than over the weekend when protests turned violent. President Trump defending his decision to send National Guard troops, but the California state is suing, claiming Trump's actions are leading to more unrest.
As he was returning to the White House, President Trump was asked if he agrees with Border Czar Tom Holman's threat to arrest Governor Gavin Newsom for obstructing immigration enforcement.
I would do it if I was Tom. I think it's great.
Now on social media, Newsom writing, quote, the president of the United States just called for the arrest of a sitting governor, saying this is a day I hoped I would never see in America. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. This is a line we cannot cross as a nation. This is an unmistakable step toward authoritarianism, Newsom wrote. Alex Stone, EBC News.
Health and Human Secretary Services Secretary RFK Jr. has terminated all 17 members of the CDC's Independent Advisory Board. Storms are targeting parts of the South and East Coast today. This is ABC News.